It's 6 p.m. on Monday, March 28th, 2016. We'll call the Village of Alloway Plan Commission meeting to order. We'll start with a roll call. Kowalczyk Adrians?
Here.
Hanson?
Here.
Dart?
Here.
Rop?
Here.
Breslau?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here.
And Kornowski is here. Move on to item number two, modify or adopt the agenda. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
Move to adopt.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Item number three, minutes from February 22nd, 2016. If anybody has any changes or amendments, speak your piece.
Do we need to amend the next meeting date because it was not scheduled then for March 7th, but for the regularly scheduled meeting? I know we had initially talked about that there might be an interim meeting for the development.
So that what we said was March 7th was when we decided that night, correct? If I remember correctly, and then it was decided after the fact that we were going to change it to the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. And all the applicable notices went out on time, obviously.
Right.
So.
So we don't need to change.
I don't think so. There are no comments. We'll entertain a motion.
Move it up.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are good. Item number four, announcements. From the Planning Commissioner Trevor or Brad.
Just a few things here. Again, a reminder about our farmers market starting July 7th, the Thursday evenings through October 6th. Quite a big vendor change from last year. Still looking about having 30 vendors, but a lot more variety of vegetable vendors in there and different kinds of crafts. Live music, yoga on the lawn, so it'll be an exciting time. Then some updates on our projects. Mayflower, we're still working with them. Should expect to see something back soon. And Quick Trip, as you noticed, they started on the corner of Webster and Garland. Expect to be open by mid-July.
Sounds great. Any other announcements? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to item number five, public appearances. I'm assuming the crowd's here for item number six, the preliminary approval of the apartment complex. So we can suspend the rules after we hear from the petitioners and let the public talk at that time. If there's another item that the public would like to talk about, you can certainly approach the podium.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I have a couple concerns. Primary concern that I've brought up numerous times is I believe that the village is not using the plan development district process correctly. I believe that they're using it to circumvent the zoning laws, and that's not allowed. So whenever a PDD does come before you, if you can pay special attention to the zoning that is currently on the site and whether a PDD needs to actually be used or if a zoning change would be more appropriate. Specifically, I had concerns about the Town and Country site, lot number one, which is also known as the Mayflower subdivision. That site is a commercial site that, as it turns out, as it comes to light in the last 60 days, has been illegally subdivided, and the map that was given to this planning commission the certified survey map was different than the certified survey map that was given to the village board. And you guys didn't see the subdivision on the back triangle, and that created a landlocked parcel, a parcel of land zoned commercial without any public access to a public road. And that's illegal in every state in the country. So the village has decided to either sell the parcel, rezone it residential, and sell it to a neighbor who had complained, or just give it flat out at no cost to Mayflower in order to rectify the illegal subdivision. So before they go ahead and do that, I think it's worthwhile to look at the process that we've been going through on this particular parcel and see whether the subdivision is illegal on its form, on its face, why it was done in the first place, and then how we can prevent that from happening in the future. And then my second objection, which isn't directly tied to you, tied to the board, is that in doing that subdivision in the BDD process, the village decided to give the buyers a two-for-one sale. They cut the price in less than half on the fair market value because they wanted to see that subdivision done. So if the village wants to give a $200,000 incentive to a private party, they should make that incentive open to everybody, not just a handful of people. Thanks.
Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to discuss another issue that's maybe not on the agenda? Okay. Moving on to item number 6, action regarding preliminary approval of petition from Bishop's Hill Apartments, LLC, requesting planned development district on parcel AL-56-2, located at 1921 Riverside Drive. Trevor or Brad, I guess we'll let you kind of kick it off, or if there's a presentation that's going to be done by the petitioner.
Sure, I can start things out. Keith Gary from Landmark Development and Dave Schauser from Non-Associates are also here to answer specific questions with development. But Bishop Hill LLC is requesting preliminary approval for PDD for a 48-unit apartment building, as you said, at 1921 Riverside Drive. I guess answer a few questions right away. The reason why we're going through the PDD development process versus rezoning is there are a few issues with the site that wouldn't be allowed in under just a straight high-density district zoning. Biggest one being the setbacks. Setbacks are something the quarter study and the comprehensive plan call for, smaller, shorter setbacks. That is something that the developer is trying to address by having 15-foot setbacks as opposed to 30-foot setbacks that are required. Again, this development is originally the developer proposed having more townhome-looking development along Riverside Drive and St. Joseph, but because of fire access and some stormwater issues and grading issues, we came up with the more present layout that's presented in front of you. Developer has been willing to work with us. They have addressed some pedestrian issues, as you can see in the site plan, as well as acknowledging the Arboretum Trail, which was something called for in the corridor study. In conjunction with this process, the developer is going through a developer's agreement with the village, which will be discussed at tomorrow's village board meeting. That developer's agreement calls for completion of the project of the eight building project by January 1st, 2018. Two of the buildings will be completed this year yet, and six are expected to be completed next year. Keith and Dave, if you have anything to add, I'll pull up the site plan for the...
I think what would be best is if maybe if we let the public speak, and then maybe I can answer any of those questions that they would have. I think that would probably work well. That way I don't have to do it twice and see what they have to say, and we can try and answer the questions.
I'm fine with that for the rest of the plan commission. Is that we would suspend the rules and allow the public to come to the podium and ask questions, and then if you could just kind of write them down and I'll try to answer them as they come out. Maybe summarize your answers at the end of when the public's done speaking, just to, in the essence of time. So I'll entertain a motion to suspend the rules and allow the public to comment. We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Anybody from the audience that would like to come up and discuss the project or concerns, we can entertain it. Please remember to state your name and address.
Yep. Hi, I'm Terry DeGrief. I live at 366 West St. Joseph, Unit 6. And first of all, I want to thank the members for declining Crest Oil, the majority of the members. I'm a happy Alloway property owner because of it. And like the Crest Oil one, I have a concern, and just maybe a minor concern. I guess the major concern with Crest Oil was, of course, the convenience store and the type of people that typically are around convenience stores and the draw of crime and that sort of nature. The concern of putting an apartment building isn't so much of a concern of mine. My concern is, I guess I would like to see the layout and how eight separate units are going to be put into this parcel. And also the height of these buildings, because I have, my view is out, I overlook the Brennan Bueller. Because I take it you're the contractor, the builders. My unit overlooks Brennan Bueller, and I can see the water, and I can also see the Pepper Stadium. It sounds ridiculous or silly to some people, but honestly, when I purchased my unit, that was the reason why I purchased it, because not many people can say they can see the Pepper Stadium. Or the water, for that matter. I am not at all opposed to an apartment complex. I'm just wondering what type of apartment complex. Possibly, I don't know if it's for elderly. It doesn't. I guess it doesn't really matter. But if you are blocking my view, if the height of it is a problem, is your plan to work with the residents who all have a view on that side of the building? Because there's eight residents that in my building that can see the water and the Packer Stadium. So I know it's silly, but please don't take that away from me. Other than that, I have no issues with the project. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else have any questions or concerns they'd like to bring up for the developers to answer?
I'm Brad Hansen. I live at 1420 South Place Street. I've seen the renderings as well as the elevations of it. My only comment is I think in looking at the corridor study and comparing it to the elevations we've seen presented here, or I've seen presented to the board here, that it doesn't quite fit maybe a more urban setting, more higher density, what I thought the corridor study was getting after, maybe a three-story building with mixed residential and commercial use on the first floor. So that's what I would like to see, maybe get some more commercial development down there that would draw people down the Arboretum Trail towards the Fox River Trail, shops that they could stop at along the way, in addition to providing more housing for younger families as well as middle-aged families in the area. So I applaud the developer's efforts of bringing this sort of a development rather than the gas station that we saw previously presented. So thank you. Thanks.
Okay, great. Anybody else like to come up and speak? Okay, not many questions for you. If you could address the Carrie's first issue and then maybe Brad's. And
Dave Krauser from Mahon Associates, and I'll do my best. My partner's actually the one who's working on this project, and he had a conflict with meetings tonight, so he asked me if I could come up here. So I'll do my best at answering your questions. As far as the height, these buildings are two-story. I asked the developer if he knew exactly how high these buildings are, and we don't have an exact height on them yet, but being two-story, you could probably figure that you're probably looking about 26 feet, somewhere in there. Now, this property does drop off quite a bit, so because I think from the back of this site up to those existing buildings, you've got probably about a 20-foot drop right there. So they should be able to see over the top of these. The Packer Stadium, I don't think it'd be a problem. The river, you know, you are looking downhill. All right, thanks. You are looking downhill, so that might be a little more difficult. But I guess I guess to be blunt, you know, and I understand what she's asking for as far as not blocking views. But depending upon what you get in here for high use for commercial, you're probably going to have some views that are going to be blocked along the way. People didn't actually pay for those views when they bought their structure, unfortunately. But again, be that as it may, kind of what the nature of the beast. But there's 48 units here. And as a PDD, we've done PDDs all over the county. In other counties, this is common practice within a zoning that PUDs can come into play, and then there's give and take within the ordinance. You actually create a new ordinance. There's nothing illegal about this PDD coming into place on this. Part of the negotiation is obviously this walkway that they're trying to connect from that East River corridor all the way to the Fox River and hook up with that trail. So those are some of the things that we did. I know there's infrastructure in here that we're looking at that may or may not be able to, in sewer and whatnot, that was servicing the existing site, which may have to be upgraded, probably have to be upgraded. We're doing stormwater management. That's an upgrade from what was on. There was no stormwater management on this site. Now there's actually going to be stormwater management on the site. So that's going to be treated before it's getting down into the Fox River. One of the other questions that came up was possibly another outlet for fire protection here. It's funny because when I talk with my planner, he says to keep these unique projects and to keep them kind of self-contained, he thinks it's a mistake to have that come out there. However, we're perfectly capable of just opening this up and bringing this out. We did look at the dimension. I did see that in the staff report they wanted 60 feet from this intersection back, and I think we're looking at somewhere about 80 feet is what we had. We took a look at that today, so we'd have plenty of dimension to actually get that out if we'll work with staff on that with the site plan as this thing progresses. So if we need that, we can. As far as fire protection, you know, I'm not even sure they'd want to drive a truck in here. If these buildings were on fire, they'd probably fight them from outside the project without even driving in. But I'm not the fire chief, so where they drive their trucks, I'm not sure. Other than that, there's a pretty good-sized wall down on this side right here. On that southern end, or excuse me, that's the eastern end. That's going to stay. We're not going to disturb that. Obviously, that's where that elevation difference between here and this property down here is pretty steep. So none of that's changing. There weren't many questions, so I'm not sure if there was anything else you had that I could address.
Just one
sure.
Comment. In the material that we received, it proposes three stories in height. The material I'm looking at here that was given to us says three stories. Now, I know you have a pitched roof and you have a couple of dormers in each building that would be part of a third story. So it may not be a full three stories in terms of occupancy, but yet in terms of height, it might
be. Keith Garrett, 662 Marble Rock. I represent the ownership, Bishop's Hill LLC. The buildings are actually two stories, and we put a loft in the middle of it. So we're utilizing a higher pitch roof and utilizing those loft units in the two middle units. So I don't know the exact height of the units, but from if you look at a side view, if you could go back, Trevor, to the other to the site plan, that building that's above us, it's about 20 some feet above our first our elevation here. You can see it right the condo that the lady lives in. It's kind of angled. Toward right there, yeah, it's kind of angled. Our building is...
And it is kind of facing back this direction.
We're not really blocking...
No,
you might right
way.
Here.
Pardon me?
The other direction from...
This is your condo right here.
Right, but I can see the stadium. Is that St. George's left?
She's saying the stadium would be back this direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So... It's a two-story with a loft in the middle. And
wish I had a big aerial so I could see exactly, which I can do. You just don't have it here for me.
I don't know the exact. I think it's 20-foot drop from the first floor of their condos to the first floor of our highest building. Then it's an 18-foot drop from that building down to Riverside Drive. So it's terraced very nicely. All the units are going to be rented for between $950 and $1,100 a month. All high-end finishings, high-end appliances, granite countertops, attached garages, two first-floor units for every six units. Those we are going to change to have two-car garages, so it will appeal to the senior citizens, and the upper units with the loft will appeal to the millennials. This color scheme has not been decided yet. They just put that together quickly, but...
Okay, I think maybe before we start talking to the Plan Commission, we should go back to regular session. So,
did he want them to address at all any the idea of mixed use facility versus straight residential? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we can do that now, unless you want to talk about it as a group.
I don't know if there was a market study or something.
Yeah, we looked at a mixed use for the site, and market studies did not support it. If you look at downtown Green Bay, you look at the T-Wall property, they did a mixed use. The Metro on the corner is a mixed use, and the only vacancies are the commercial on the first floor. All the rest of the apartments are full, so we really don't, our lenders will not finance mixed use for the site. They want 100% residential. So we looked at it.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to return to regular session.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, we're back in regular session for the Plan Commission to give comments to the petitioner.
I have a list of comments that no one else does.
Yeah, sure. Start us off.
Some of them support some of the staff comments. So, but with respect to the program, I agree with the resident comment that a mixed-use proposal would be preferred, or at least some means of bringing in mixed-use development.
Would you mind speaking into the mic a little bit more?
Is the mic working?
Yeah, it should be.
Anyways, I agree with the idea that mixed use would be preferred. It would be nice to see if some sort of plan could be developed where mixed use might be brought in at a future date. With respect to the site layout, I'm concerned about the isolation of the development. I don't believe it should be a self-contained development, and believe an additional drive should be provided at the west parking. I don't think it's good for the development to have people drive through it each internally. I think that will create a lot of, if these are rental units for people who have regular jobs and during the working day, you know, you could have a traffic jam at that one little exit a couple times during the day.
Where one of the issues that my planner brought up on that was you get that driveway, even though it still might be, you know, 90 feet from that intersection, you have people coming around that corner and trying to quick make it into that corner with other traffic coming down, and with that walkway coming down where you're going to have bikers and whatnot coming down there, that could just pose a little bit of an issue. But it's not an issue on our end. If you want the driveway coming out, we will do that.
Well, I would be willing to listen to those comments if you'd done a traffic study on St. Joseph's, but I don't think there's enough traffic on St. Joseph's to worry about that way.
And there may not. It'd be more, I don't know if it'd be so much traffic as the pedestrians, you know, using that walkway that's coming all the way through. But like I said, if you want the driveway, we'll put the driveway there because it really doesn't affect the project.
I don't mind if we go back and forth in the comments, but could you guys step up to the microphone just in case so we can record it, if at all possible? If you guys could, if you're going to respond to some of the comments. Just step up to the microphone, just so it's recorded.
Not a problem.
Amplified.
Usually everyone tells me to be quiet, I'm too loud.
But on Roger's point, I think maybe what you're trying to get at, Roger, so are there two stall garages for every unit?
No.
Okay.
There's one stall garage for each unit.
Okay, because I thought I heard something about two stall garages being part of the, because that would be 96 cars.
There'll be two car garages for the lower units.
Oh,
so there's on every six units, there's two lower and four upper.
Okay.
So the lower units will have a two-car attached garage.
Okay. But that's still a good point, Roger. That's still
you've got a lot of cars in this development, and you're going to need more than one drive. And I think you should remove that drive, connecting drive, between the west two units and the east two units. And you need to have some pavement there so fire trucks can get through, but you should put bollards or something that blocks that drive, so that people have to go out one drive or the other.
No problem. Well, you'd still have to allow the fire.
Right, and the fire trucks would pull the bollards if they have to go through. Okay. Just make that a fire lane,
sure,
but not a driving lane.
Okay. That's minor.
It appears that there's only one trash collection place. Does everybody at the far west end have to bring their trash and recyclables all the way to this one trash area?
Yeah, that's common. We've got considerably much larger apartment complexes that they have to go a lot further than that for putting these in. You do like to keep them fairly contained and the other thing you have to remember, you've got the garbage trucks and stuff coming in there too, and especially if they're not driving all the way through here now, if you had two of them, it would be, if they put these ballards here, that's going to make that an issue, getting to just the one. We talked about putting another one back here.
People have to drag their garbage cans, rolling garbage cans, up to this, and then... How do they
usually in the apartments? They've got a couple of bags that they carry out in the evening when they go for a walk, or if they put it in their car when they go to leave, and then they just drive by and drop them off.
We could add one, Roger, to the north of the bottom two units towards the diocese property.
We don't have the right one up here.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm just making the comment. You know, it's for you to take and consider and work on with the staff. So. I think the eastmost units lack a really convenient walkway to St. Joseph's. So providing a walkway that cuts across the driveway, you know, that's closer to that unit rather than having to go quite as far as they have to would be a good idea. I don't think you need that central walk that passes through the whole facility. I'm not sure what that does for you, but it's...
Well, I suppose you can come up this way or come back. It does allow these back units to get back over here, too. We'll look at that.
Mm-hmm. It seems you do have space on the east end of the site for another biofilter, so you could stage that a little bit.
That's really steep right there. That's where we're coming off that hill coming back down.
So you're going to slope that pretty severely?
You mean to the behind the trash?
Between the eastmost building and the ones that are parallel to St. Joseph.
That's possible. We may not need that, though. Okay. I think we were pretty close with the sizes of what we had down on that south end, and you do try and get it at the bottom end of the project mm-hmm. so that you're not putting in more of them because they do require maintenance.
Okay. Is there parking on St. Joseph Street? Is there street parking permitted on St. Joseph's?
I don't recall.
Not on the main street.
It's just how much guest?
I've never seen
it.
There is parking on St. Joseph's.
Okay. So it's just the question. It doesn't seem as if there's enough space for guest parking. So you might, and if there isn't parking permitted on St. Joseph's, it's something you might want to pursue. There's plenty of room for it. I think providing adequate guest parking is important for a facility like this, and street parking is a good way to do that. Are you going to make any efforts to develop the Arboretum Trail? I mean, what are you going to do there?
We're working with the staff. We haven't covered to move that.
Sure. West St. Joseph's scheduled to be reconstructed within probably the next 5 years. So rather than have the developer do something that will be torn up within 5 years, we have discussed with staff that would probably be something that we'll have to take on ourselves.
So at this point, there would be no sidewalk put in?
Not currently, no. But there will be one plan for it in the future, within, 5 years.
Okay. How will the retaining wall be improved in any way at all?
You mean like painted or?
Well, I mean, you make statement in your impact statement that this is a blighted site. And
I didn't make that statement.
You didn't?
I don't know where that came
out. Somebody talked about this. Yeah. Impact analysis report.
I saw that in the paper, and then I did see I saw that blighted, that word blighted somewhere. And when I was talking to my planner this morning, I asked him, I said, would you consider this a blighted site? I said, I don't, and he said, yes, it meets the characteristics. And I said, why would it meet the characteristics? It's pretty much just a vacant site. He said, well, you've got all the existing pavement that was there. There was no building. Obviously, that was taken down. But you've got all this old pavement out there with a year or two, you're going to have weeds and everything else because the pavement, as it sits there, will start to break up and whatnot. And that does constitute blighted. I don't know if I would use that term. But
there's no definition of blight, so it's
that's what my planner was telling me this morning. So I was like, okay.
Well, anyways, it just seems that the one disagreeable characteristic of the site is that it's just a bare concrete retaining wall. And if there's something that can be done to improve it, I think the residents on that end of the site would definitely appreciate it, and it might get you a few more dollars in rent.
Well, we're open for suggestions if you have any ideas.
Yeah,
what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
We were thinking about putting additional detached garages along that wall.
Okay.
If there's another room.
Oh, well.
Which would add a lot of parking. but we think it's a great site. We don't believe it's blighted at all. We think we love the location and we're excited about it.
The only other comment, and it's just purely with respect to aesthetics, is it seems to be more of a kind of a sea shanty styling on the buildings. And they don't, again, this is with respect to one of the comments in the analysis report, I don't think that's a style that reflects the character of buildings in Alloway. They have a more modernistic look to them. And I don't know how you would get there, but I think I would prefer to see a more modern approach. In fact, if you're using the PDD process, I would have loved to have seen you come in with flat roof buildings that have vegetated roofs on them rather than pitched roofs, just kind of very common-looking type of development. I mean, they're all over. They all look the same except for a little bit of, you know, what the siding looks like. It's just it's something that truly looks unique and truly fits the community, which is very eclectic, I think would be more appropriate as far as the styling issue is concerned. Thank you.
I would just say that you know, some of that is cost, and the other thing is, you know, when you start doing seated roofs and whatnot, there has to be a lot in the sealing process and everything else, so that you don't have that.
Well, that was just an idea.
One of the things with this building, you know, obviously they're trying to break up some of the roof lines from just a common apartment, and I think that was even similar to when I think they put in what was that CVR? Was that CVR or was that Walgreens that went up right on the right up the street?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember at the time when that went in that there was a lot of controversy, and then I think they even put like some of the dormer windows and things like that, which kind of reflect what we've got right here. So that was something that was done within Alloway.
Well, we
at that
do have
time,
this goofy requirement in our zoning code for pitched roofs, which.
I personally like the design.
Well, and seriously, sometimes just doing a different color scheme can change some of that.
And this is not the final. Like I said, we're going to try to match up the stone to like the church on Webster Avenue, or that you know Savings and Loan across from CVS. It's got that combination of brick and stone. If you look at that. Kind of like a red brick and a cream stone. That's a real good look. And there's a lot of Alloway buildings like that. We're going to try and incorporate that into this design.
Okay. You know, you do have a nice symmetrical look. And then there's this asymmetrical ornamentation. I don't know if you need that. It's a detailed comment. It's just a comment. So I have my architect's licenses are still in force, even though I'm allowing them to retire.
Well, the shortest architect is going to come back in a bit.
Part of the design was probably my fault. Keith had asked what he thought the village would be open to. From my previous discussions, I had understood a lot of residents like the more safe residential kind of feeling with respect to the buildings. So I guess if Keith is open to something different, but the original design is my doing. So
I don't think you're wrong. You know, with a development like this, if you didn't have some sort of design feature like a dormer, it almost looked like army barracks, mm-hmm. like boxes. So just keep something in the back of your mind when you're talking to your architect, if they could come up with any special feature, it would be kind of nice to see. But I don't think you're off base.
I have to say they proposed the first design we looked at was totally different than this, and this is much more appealing. And not the design of the building, but the layout of the building and use of the property. And I think they did a good job using the space.
Certainly is a better idea than a gas station.
I think our residents will agree with you.
I'm happy to see the buildings on the outside with all the traffic pieces on the inside.
Yeah.
Me too. It'll look a lot nicer. Yeah. And that's what they changed from the first one.
All the garages will be, won't be able to see the garages from the outside, from St. Joseph or Riverside. It'll look like the front of a house. So. The only thing it doesn't show is there's going to be decks on the buildings, too.
And those are in back?
In front.
In front.
Oh, okay. So is it going to be a mix of, is there going to be three bedrooms, two bedrooms, one bedroom?
All two bedroom, two bath.
All two bedroom, two bath? Yeah.
And you tell them about what you're looking at for rents?
Rents will be from $9.50 to $11.50.
So there's a lot of potential for a pretty large population of people to live in this little development. Which is neat to see, because when we're trying to develop things and trying to get economic development impact, it's, you need people first on this.
Well, that's what spurs business is, is rooftops.
Exactly.
The people that that's...
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw the development coming in. It's like, oh, right, we're going to get a lot of population in our key area. A lot more population. So I guess in this phase, because this is going to come back, right, for final, so we're really talking about the concept here tonight. I think Roger brought up a lot of great points. If there's anything else as far as guidance that you can give to the petitioners. Kind of tough right now with the schematic more than anything. Howard, do you have something? I don't know if you did.
The only thing, and I'm sure it's probably not viable to change, but you're calling for vinyl siding, and I know in the staff comments they had some specifications that they requested or proposed in terms of thickness. Are we okay with that? Is everybody, staff, I mean, you proposed it, so I assume the staff is okay with it.
We're going to look at a hardy board siding, or a permanent siding, mm-hmm. rather than the vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come back for the final, we'll actually have the samples of the textures of the building.
Mm-hmm. I just know some siding in that area, it'll be quite exposed, you know, because of the elevation and the wind and the rain and the sun will come at it from the west. And sometimes vinyl, if it's not,
I don't think it's
expensive enough, you know, it kind of looks wavery and kind of cheap looking. So
we'll probably go with smart siding, which is a hard surface mm-hmm. siding.
So it would be smooth finished rather than
smooth.
I always like to make the point that if you see a wood grain texture in a material, then you know it isn't wood.
Right, we can make it smooth.
There's a lot of new materials coming out, too. Some really nice ones.
I guess just for my own understanding, are you planning on having like common areas, or is this going to be pretty much a standalone kind of thing? Or
there are no common areas.
Okay. Okay. And your target demographic when you did your market study, you said it will range from young people to
seniors to millennials. This has been identified as one of the best locations in Brown County for multifamily because the closest to downtown, the closest to 172, the central location. I mean, there's a lot of apartments being built. The vacancy factor in Brown County is only 3%.
I think it was less than that.
And a lot of them are going in Hobart, right. Pulaski, Whalen Ledgeview, far west side of DePier, Lawrence.
Yeah.
So to have an opportunity to build in this location is really going to be exciting.
This is a long way from a park or playground. If you do expect young families, perhaps with a child or two,
But you're close to the trail. People love that trail. You know, that trail is going to be a big amenity to get access to that trail. But I don't see a lot of children. I see more.
But there isn't a public access. I mean, people do use the parking lot across the street to get down there, but mm-hmm. it's not the true public access.
Right.
So maybe some sort of little area where a grandparent could go with a grandchild on the property and they could play outside would be, you know, if your biofilter area is something, just more benches or would be a good thing to think about.
I think
that maybe that area where you were looking at for the possibly, because there is a big bigger area between those two units right there that could be used for that. And the biofilters almost need to be on the west end because that's where everything flows to. So.
You have the opportunity with this site to do a lot of really neat things over the next couple of years, especially if you're going to phase the development. So I encourage you to not just look at apartment buildings, but also what you can do to make it more inclusive for the community that lives in there. If you're not going to develop, would it be the east side of the site that's going to phase two? Or is that phase one? Because I heard Trevor say something about the deadline is going to be 2018 for...
The first building would be the one up by the wall.
Okay, so this would be the first.
That would be this year, yeah.
Okay.
According to our developers, maybe we'd have to have those two buildings done by the end of the year, and then the up north one would be next year.
Okay, so that's relatively quick, but yeah, think about amenities within the property if possible. I mean, if you're going to have a place for a grandparent to take a grandchild, maybe have a volleyball court for a young person to... People are looking for different things, you know? I don't have any other comments. Does anybody else have any other comments? I think we're probably pretty good on tonight's discussion of the concept.
Yeah, I think.
Think so? Everybody good on the discussion of the concept, I think?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Can we ask some questions regarding what they're talking about?
You know what? I'm fine with us. I wonder if can we do that after we've opened up the item? Do we have to close the item and then suspend the rules? I have to get my Robert Rules book up. Because we open the item, do we have to vote on it prior to suspending the rules and allowing public to speak?
Right. Otherwise, there will be opportunity to speak. This will be addressed by the village board tomorrow evening.
Okay.
And then if that's approved tomorrow evening, then there will be two other opportunities.
It'll come back again.
Well, we can hang around if they want to ask questions.
Yeah, if that's
a minor question about the color and stuff.
Sure, yeah. If that can
no, it's
wait.
Not much.
Okay.
Really answer my question.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Okay, so we've got action regarding preliminary approval of petition from Bishop's Hill Apartments LLC requesting plan development district on parcel AL-56-2 located at 1921 Riverside Drive. Is there a motion to approve?
I will make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Any questions?
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Okay, moving on to item number 7, action regarding amendments of sign code, section 11.28 of zoning ordinance. I think it's great, Trevor, that you guys took it to the Economic Development Committee and got their comments to it. Saw them in the memo. That's very beneficial.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the stuff they agreed with you, they also recommended a variance process in there, which I think you guys talked about last meeting. Jack, can you just dive in?
Yeah, I think
okay.
So, I guess.
That actually brings me to my first point. We start from the beginning, page 8, which I believe is your first page, is our first significant change. And again, you guys discussed at the last meeting having some sort of variance process, and Economic Development Committee asked for that as well. This was language I kind of borrowed from here. They only had a one-step process. I know it was kind of discussed at Economic Development Committee that there would be some two-step process because when the board used to hear the variances, they became quite frequent. And maybe in an effort to reduce the frequency of variance requests we receive for sign codes. Maybe make it a little bit more cumbersome. I guess we don't want to make it too strict or anything, but having a two-step process go through Plan Commission and then Village Board, as opposed to just straight going to the Village Board. And then that way, Village Board would be able to hear Plan Commission's interpretation of the zoning code as well.
That's typical of what you see in other communities, right? That's what I've kind of always seen. So I don't think that's out of the ordinary to have a two-step process if we're going to move forward with it. But
and then we talked about fee for that, but that'd be something I would look at other communities and what they charge for variance, and we'll come back to that, but that'd be added to our fee schedule.
Do we already have a variance fee for the Board of Review?
For the Board of Appeals, we have a $150 fee, whether or not we charge that for a signed variance or not.
And state law allows for Plan Commission to do this variance review as opposed to a Board of Review when established?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have any questions, just feel free to stop me. Otherwise, the next big change from our last meeting is on page 10. And that's the park signs we talked about. And that's the guidelines that I passed out at the beginning of the meeting. Chris Clark, our parks director, put together at the request of the Plan Commission last meeting some guidelines that they consider or review when it comes to allowing signs in the parks, which I believe he does a pretty good job in covering that they're not going to be neglected, that they're going to be facing the fields when they face the fields. The only request he had was maybe remove athletics facilities, only because sometimes there's a tournament and they would like to have banners maybe the entrance or something that would be put up the day of the tournament and removed at the end of the tournament as well. So he said, so we don't limit him too much. But the biggest one was the LED message center. Again, sticking with the 40%, most communities go anywhere from 30 to 50% of the sign is allowed for LED message center. And we talked about last time the amount of time between, or the frequency of the signs changing, throwing out 3 seconds, but then we also wanted to guard against signs appearing in residential neighborhoods, specifically for churches or something that's not a commercial area. So for that, I kind of said if a sign is located on a lot that's surrounded by more than 40% or more of residential, that it would have to do the 15-minute change, kind of like we had originally. And I just chose 15 minutes because that's what we already have. Page 13, makes big change from the last meeting. And that has to do with real estate signs. And these were some of the comments I received from the Plan Commission and from your fellow members, and I just want to be sure that we are all on the same page with these as far as changing the requirements from an open house to having an open house sign up for 12 hours as opposed to a full day, cutting the amount the signage from 32 for a non-residential property to 16 square feet, a residential property 8 to 6. James, I'm not sure if you want to weigh in at all on that. This isn't really my realm of expertise.
Well, this is residential also. Because we don't really do anything residential.
And then they also have non-residential. I see. So 16 is close to 32 square feet. Open land would remain 32 square feet. And offhand, if you have.
So what's the non-residential end of it then for square feet?
So
if we have
16.
A 4x8, that's 32,
right.
Which is what we have up here.
Right. So what's being proposed is 16 square feet as opposed to 32 square feet.
Yeah, so that's a 4x4, which is like the one that's up here on Harry Mackle's property.
Okay.
And his wall, that's a 4x4.
So you don't have...
That's sufficient for us. I mean, we can do a lot. Most of ours are 4x4. 4x8s are nicer because they're bigger. But 4x4 does work. I guess it depends on what it is, like the vacant land. It's nice to have a 4x8 because there's nothing around there, so it stands out. Whereas a 4x4 on Harry's property, or 4x8 on Harry's property, would really be too big. It's almost, you know, it's distracting.
Yeah, so in that case, the decision was made to go with a 4x4 sign because of the character of the property, and the market
right.
decided that. So do we
right.
want to limit?
Well, and sometimes like a 2x4, you see a lot of those in front of office because it's more of a classier thing. It's not so protruding or so massive, I guess.
The opinion is if you keep it at 32 square feet, we know that the market will regulate itself and decide if they're going to use a 4x4 or a 4x2. In most cases, we have evidence of that. So I guess it's the Plan Commission to decide whether or not we want to make people use 4x4 signs or let the market decide based on the style of the property or the condition of the property, the size of it.
4x8s are very rare. I mean, most people won't, owners wouldn't tolerate that. It's different on vacant land because, like, if you look at that land, it really needs to be a 4x8 because there's just nothing there. Versus a 4x4 or a 2x4.
Sure. It's just something to think about.
Okay. So maybe we'll leave that in there, and if it ever becomes an issue, I guess we can readdress it. Going to page 16. Existing signs. This is actually what I added was commonly found in a lot of sign ordinances. It's if the expense or the repairs ever become 50% more in value, then they are forced to conform. Otherwise, you have a sign that just keeps getting damaged forever and never comes conforming. So.
Yeah, that's a tough one because it's hard to validate. The cost.
Right.
So they submit a cost and a permit, right?
Right.
And then do you make them provide a contractor's affidavit or, you know, it's a problem that I've run into in the past. It's tough to validate the cost. So a lot of times what you do is you do a 50% of the footage or whatever else you're going to alter.
50%
well,
of the land, I'm
sorry. Don't they have to apply for a permit when they're going to do work on a sign?
What's the existing value of the
sign? Yeah, ascertaining,
okay.
Yeah, the value
sure.
and the
so,
cost. It's kind of like a...
I mean, the cost, I think, could be pretty easily identified. You're going to get bids for it. You really can't lie too horrifically about how much your new sign is going to cost, but I can see how much is your old sign worth. Being
yeah.
pretty nebulous.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And then there's going to be a lot of sign alterations that are exactly 50% or 49.5% of the proposed value. So that's just a problem that you run into. You will run into it. So.
What the example we had not too long ago is we had a existing non-conforming sign that went to change out their support structures. And how the ordinance reads is they're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
As long as posts went back in the same holes and everything like that. That's what we were trying to get at there as far as if you're really changing the support, it should probably come down.
Yeah. What do you do with buildings, non-conforming buildings? Is there a process there?
Isn't there a similar requirement for a non-conforming building?
Right. It actually, yeah.
Is it the cost?
It's cost.
And it's easier to value real estate, I guess?
It's like a 50% rule.
Yeah.
It's more than 50% of the value. Than
I guess real estate's a little easier. I'm fine with that. I mean, it's just going to be on Thursday to administer it.
Or building inspector.
Yeah. It's like, we'll never see a non-conforming sign come down.
page 18, I didn't have any changes. Well, I have changes under monument signs, but I meant to add something under wall signs, some similar language as to what I had for monument signs regarding trails. But I meant to add it, but I forgot. So I'd like to add something similar, if that's okay with you. If I can just add similar language that I do in monument signs regarding trails, non-lighted, fraction of the size allowed. What we had received a request to have a monument sign or a sign period on the trails, and we don't currently allow that. Well, actually, we do, but then they would forfeit their sign along the road, which a lot of businesses don't do. And on the one hand, I don't want to take away the view or the nature of the trail, but on the other hand, I want to recognize that it is a viable transportation option to people, and I think by allowing signs there, it kind of gives validity to that means of transportation or that mode of travel. So I spoke with Brown County and DNR and showed them the requirements that we were proposing for the monument signs, and they thought that was totally acceptable. 5.5 feet high, 6 square feet tall, not illuminated. Of course, you don't need illuminated signs because the trail's closed at night. So. With monument signs, you guys had talked about this briefly at the last meeting, and Economic Development Committee also brought it up. Where you have a one or two tenant building that's much, much larger than 25,000 square feet, you might want to allow for a larger sign. So what the Economic Development Committee suggested is just removing the word and putting or, and then for three plus tenant buildings, and then changing one and two tenant buildings and giving that building footprint for that as well. And then another issue that you discussed last time was one and two tenant signs having maximum height being 6 feet. Economic Development Committee suggested maybe keeping it at 8 feet. I don't know how strongly everyone is on that.
Well, it's currently 8, right?
Correct.
And the thoughts of the Economic Development Committee is why would we reduce that? We could actually cause ourselves to have non-conforming signs? Because if we currently have 8 foot and they can only be 6 foot, they're non-conforming.
Are there any current permits for monument signs fitting this category?
None pending right now.
None pending? But then, do any exist? I mean, do we have a... Is it possible to look through our sign permits and determine if there's a... You know, if there are existing signs, monument signs, that fit this category?
I know the Quick Trip sign that was just approved, there is 7.5 feet.
So again, the market decided to go even beneath our maximum height requirement. Certainly speak for everyone, but so we've gotten the public input from the Economic Development Committee. That's the most input that we've gotten from through this process, and I don't disagree with them. So it's just a matter if everybody feels okay with this.
I'm fine with it. I've been actually going through this process, paying a lot more attention to the signs that we have, and we have such a huge variety of heights and sizes, and it'll be nice to hopefully start having some of them get reconstructed and have to change and conform, but I mean, we have such a, I don't know that it's necessarily a problem to make a few more signs non-conforming, but I'm fine if the Economic Development Committee feels strongly about having that extra 2 feet available for sign height. I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm okay with that. Also.
Heads are making this way too easy.
We could torture you, Trevor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
We could torture you.
So then again, with the trail signs, that's in here as well. Then we get down to page 22, and that's the final big change from last time. What we currently had in the illumination standards was measure of watts, which is measure of power, not luminance, illumination. Standard industry standard uses nits for LED message center signs, which is candelas per square meter. But again, you'd use foot candles for maybe a light. And the difference between foot candles and nits is foot candles is measurement away from something. So, like, I would measure this light from here and get a foot candle. A nit is the amount of luminance coming off that light. So, how much light that light is actually throwing off.
So, it would be at the base of the fixture. Right.
Yeah, as opposed to how much light I'm seeing at this position. So foot candles has distance associated with it as well. But it, again, industry uses nits. And I have in there. No, I don't have in there. No, I do. 500 nits is approximately the brightness of a smartphone. And presented this to some of the sign companies in the area, and they said 500 is plenty for at night. Mm-hmm. But really, I had 5,000 in there because as what the pier has. But they said really 5,000 isn't, they recommended 9 to 10, which is the maximum these signs are going right now. But doing some more research, 8,000 appears to be the more appropriate level, especially for this speed of travel people are going on our roads and everything. For the distances they're seeing these signs, I don't think we need to go any more than 8,000 during the day.
So you're saying 8,000 during the day and then 500 at night is right. Kind of what people are doing?
Yeah, they said if you had 5,000 minutes during the day, the sunlight will actually drown or wash it out, wash all of the light.
Sure.
So you really, your sign wouldn't be very effective. And it's hard to tell what our current signs in our village are because our current regulation wasn't practical. We weren't able to enforce it because...
Yeah. When it comes to brightness, sign manufacturers don't make signs that hurt people's eyes. They make signs for people to see clearly. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about regulating the nits, it's like, I don't think anybody's going to make a sign that gives everybody a headache and not want to go to that establishment. Mm-hmm.
So I don't again, know if we're I talking just about the people passing by. We're probably talking a lot more about the people that live or work in the area that would be exposed to
maybe from
the sun.
And that's another good point. A place like the pier, they have a lot of, think about 41 as you're going through West. There's a lot of big signs up on the front of the roads, mm-hmm. On the side of the highway that would probably require that type of illumination. And they're not surrounded by residential areas.
Seem reasonable to me. It seems like you researched it.
Yeah. There's nothing out of question here. It's just one of those things that we're not going to be able to regulate every happenstance.
But we do need something that we can, if somebody has a complaint, that we can measure against.
Right.
And say, this is what our code says. And
this is the research.
If we didn't have something that did that before, we definitely need to correct that.
Sure.
So, you're using foot candles in paragraph 5.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And that would be more for any other signs other than LED signs. So,
it's like the lighting that shines up onto the sign to not like on the fridge sign.
Right. Or even a backlit sign inside.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay, so nits are only LED measure.
I don't know if it's only LED, but that's what the industry seems to use.
All right.
Now, back at your paragraph regarding the variance.
Sure.
State building code does not allow application for variance if cost is the only issue, or if cost is an issue at all. It's only for practical purposes. So we would want to make sure that people aren't seeking variances just because they think the sign will be too expensive.
Yeah, maybe you could add that language in there somehow.
Pull the language out of the state building code.
Sure.
Can cost be part of it at all? Can it be a piece of it at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
signs, city and village board, inspectors, inspector, of course, it should be.
We have a board, can we inspect on the board?
Who's Jeff that?
Part-timer, right? I think you've done great work, Trevor, since we started this process.
Yeah.
You know, going through and looking at everything and bringing a lot of different issues to our attention so we can make informed decisions. And kudos to you and Brad for pulling it all together.
Yes, thank you.
To a coherent presentation on signs. Sometimes they can get incoherent.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want this to come back one more time in final form or if you're okay with kind of proving it how it is.
It sounds like we're okay with a lot of it. I know that the language with the variance not relating to cost, I mean, that's something that you can handle, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if we need to see that again. If it were to come back to us, I'm sure it would be a real quick look over and just try to help you if there's any flow or grammatical errors, but it certainly doesn't need to, unless the Plan Commission wants to see it in its final form. I don't see.
I don't know. It's got to go before the Village Board, so I think it would be wasting our time to
sure.
try to nitpick any more with it. So
I agree.
And then just clarification, you're okay with adding that trail change to
the 5.5 feet or the
right, but also the a similar change to the wall signs as well.
Allowing them along right. the trail side of the building. I am, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see a an issue with that.
And then I'll just email the final form before it goes to the board. Yeah.
Okay. The item is an action item. You want us to vote on this amendment, or
right.
we can? Okay.
I'll move that we approve the amended sign ordinance based on the discussion that we've had this evening.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Again, great job, Trevor.
Thank you.
All right, item number 8, next meeting date and agenda items. Is there anything that's coming up, Trevor, that would be on the agenda for the next meeting that we need to know about now? Is Mayflower coming back? Or?
It could be.
Okay.
It's possible. I think they recognize they're not going to construct this summer, so I think they're a little less in a rush now.
Construct this summer.
Right, as far as they're not going to be ready for May.
That was an awful tight schedule.
Yeah, it seemed
place.
Like it, didn't it? It really did. It really did. Okay. The only other thing that I'd like to maybe do next time is mix up the names a little bit so it's not boys on one side and girls on the other. We can do that. I noticed that midway through the meeting. I was like, this doesn't seem right. When I looked over and said, right, guys? And I looked over and said,
right, girls.
So maybe next meeting we can pick these up a little bit and get some more. Yeah, that was like a middle school dance. Okay, so then item number 9, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
right,
yeah, 25th is what I had. Is that correct, Trevor?
Right.
Okay.
All right, I won't be.
Okay, I'll write that down.
I guess we could have potentially this development resolved thing at the next meeting as well.
Oh, okay, that'd be good. Okay, moving on to item number 9, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay, we've got a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we are adjourned.